Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're going to turn to Chapter 3 of Questioning Paul. It can be found at questioningpaul.com for those that would like to move ahead or share it with friends. It's free. Questioningpaul.com. That's the other books that I would encourage our listeners to read are yadaya.com. Yadaya.com. It's a 3,500-page analysis of prophecies beginning with the creation account and the formation of the covenant. There's also intro to god.org, intro to god.org. It's a 2,000-page analysis of the Hebrew Torah, prophets, and Psalms. It provides readers with a toolkit so that they understand the oldest manuscripts, what's available to us to study, how the oldest manuscripts differ from the Masoretic, and how both differ from your English Bible translations, and then a primer on the Hebrew language, what the letters look like, what information the letters themselves convey, as well as the lexicons and interlinears that are available for us to study, and then a quick tutorial on Hebrew grammar, the uniqueness of the Hebrew language, and then we go through the subject using those tools that are the seven most important subjects to Yahweh. His beginning with His Word, His name, His covenant, His Torah teaching, His Moed Mikre, as well as His instructions, and systematically detail these subjects, the seven most important to God and therefore to us. And then for those who are interested on the facts on Islam, who are actually willing to deal with Islam as it is, as its prophet was, as its scriptures are, the most comprehensive presentation of the Islamic source material, the five books written within 200 years of Muhammad's death, the place to go for that is prophetofdoom.net, prophetofdoom.net. That'll get you most of the information that you may want to know that is used in this program. But we're now moving to Chapter 3 of Questioning Paul. Is called Yerushalem. Yerushalem is the source of our reconciliation, is what it means in Hebrew. Yaru is the source from which information and direction and guidance flow. Shalem is from Shalom, which is reconciliation. So it is the most important place in the world. Now, there was a summit that took place there, and what we're going to do is to try to ascertain what actually occurred in Jerusalem as it pertains to Paul. He claimed that there was a meeting. In fact, there's little doubt that he was summoned to a meeting by those who were very troubled by the statements that he was making. And the accounts of that meeting form several chapters of Acts. Well, certainly one chapter of Acts. And they appear to be the basis for Paul's first letter, his letter to the Galatians. It appears that it was written in haste after the Jerusalem summit as Paul's means to disregard, to dismiss, and to demean the actual disciples who encountered him during this Jerusalem summit, and to present Paul's interpretation of the events. But as we shall see, Paul's interpretation of the events as conveyed to Luke, and Paul's interpretation of the events as chronicled in Galatians, don't match. They're not even close. So Paul either lied to Luke or he lied in his letter to the Galatians. But either way, Paul lied. Shaul, as his Hebrew name, his given name was, continued his travelogue and autobiography with an accurate information. With respect to reason, the reason, I should say, and the timing of the meeting at the heart of the Promised Land in Jerusalem, the wannabe apostle lied when he wrote the following. This is from Galatians 2:1. Later, through 14 years also, I went up to Jerusalem along with Barnabas, having taken along also Titus. So that you know, Jerusalem, as I have said, was properly transliterated into Greek as Hierosolyma, at least reasonably transliterated into Greek as Jerusalem. It's a transliteration of the Hebrew Yerushalem, meaning source from which guidance regarding reconciliation flows. Barnabas, it was also transliterated correctly. That means to replicate the sound of a name from one language to another. Barnabas is an Aramaic name, which means it's a name that would have been given somebody who was from Persia, Babylon, Assyria, for that part of the world. It is from Bar, which was Aramaic for son, and Nabi, which was both Aramaic and Hebrew for prophet. So, son of a prophet, Barnabas, along with Titus. Titus is Titos in Latin. It is a name of Latin origin. In Latin, Titos means honorable. But it's interesting that all of these names, Jerusalem, Barnabas, and Titus, were properly transliterated from the original language into Greek. It's amazing that we don't have an accurate transliteration of Yahusha, of Maaseya, of Yahweh, or of any of the Hebrew prophets. We have a correct transliteration of Jerusalem from Hebrew into Greek, but yet we can't seem to render it from Greek into English and add a J, Jerusalem. No J in Jerusalem. Anyway, Jerusalem is the place where the covenant was conceived and confirmed. It is the place where Yahusha honored Yahweh's promises on behalf of the covenant's children and observed Pesach, Passover, Matzah, unyeasted bread, and Bukurim firstfruits, as well as seven sevens later, the celebration of seven Shabbat of Shavuah. It is the source from which guidance regarding reconciliation of the relationship flow. So it is incomprehensible that Paul would spend nearly two decades within walking distance of the place and people who witnessed the most important 4 days in human history and not stop by on occasion to soak it all in. You know, I live in America. And yet, I've been to Jerusalem. And I've been to Jerusalem even knowing that it's been transformed and corrupted by religious zealots over the years. He could have gone there while it was exactly as it was when Yahusha was fulfilling the four most important days in human history. He could have gone there and learned from the disciples. They were all still there. But he didn't. He could have gone to the temple, but he didn't. He could have gone to Galilee and talked with the people who heard him, but he didn't. That's extraordinarily inappropriate. And yet, since Paul will associate Jerusalem with the enslavement of mankind's in just two chapters from now, he actually does. He associates Jerusalem with the enslavement of humankind. And the fact is, according to Yahweh, Jerusalem is the place from which reconciliation flows. According to Yahweh, Jerusalem is the place where the covenant was affirmed. According to Yahweh, who happens to be God, the covenant was his covenant promises were also delivered, proven, demonstrated in human history in Jerusalem. Dode's kingdom ruled out of Jerusalem. Jerusalem is where he's going to return. And yet, this nincompoop, Paul, will say that it is the source of enslavement. His disdain for Yahweh's favorite place on earth shouldn't be surprising at all. Paul and the faith he conceived would ultimately become adverse to Yahweh's chosen people, Jews, his promised land, Israel, the Torah teaching, the covenant relationship, and the Mikre invitations to be called out and meet with God. He went up, he said, I went up, but then downward from and uncovering, and set forth to them the beneficial messenger which I preach among the races down from one's own. This is Galatians 2:2. Come on, folks. In Jerusalem they lived with him. They listened to him. It was in Jerusalem that he delivered his most powerful messages. It was in Jerusalem that he performed so many miracles. It was in Jerusalem that he confronted the religious establishment. It was in Jerusalem that he taught in the synagogues. It was in Jerusalem that these things occurred. In Israel. And yet this boob claims that he set forth to uncover the beneficial messenger which he preaches? Well, if it was the beneficial messenger, Yahusha, whom the disciples were preaching, he wouldn't be able to say that. It was the one he was preaching, and the one he was preaching had never existed in Jerusalem, because he had never existed as a real person. He was an individual made up by Paul. So Paul said, I want to go and show them what I've been preaching, and the God I've been preaching about. It's just that the God he was preaching about was completely unknown to anybody who had witnessed Yahusha. Now, as we consider the Nestle Allen's Greek New Testament 27th edition with McReynolds English interlinear rendition of this statement to further illustrate the deplorable quality of Paul's writing, beware that I checked a dozen lexicons, and all but one defined kata, which was but then downward from, kata, as downward from, not by. Not a single dictionary listed by is an option relative to kata. And we'll consider what the Nestle Allen had to say when Shattering Myths continues in a moment. So Nestle Allen reads, I went up, but by uncovering, and I set up to them the good message that I announce in the nations by own. That's just astonishing how bad that is. Now, this is the single most scholastic interlinear. Now, I understand that, you know, sometimes syntax, you can change the word order here and there, and it reads a little more smoothly in one language or another, but this is not a syntax problem. This is not a word order problem. I went up by uncovering, and I set up to them the good message that I announce in the nations by own. You know, think of just the idea of set up. You know, you set up a sting. You set up a scam. You don't set up the truth. If you're going to tell somebody, you know, if you're going to provide your testimony and you're going to provide witness to something that's true, you don't set it up. If I want to tell you a story, I'll set it up. If I want to pull the wool over your eyes, I'll set the scene. If I want to pull off a drama, I'll set the stage. I set up as a confession to them the good message that I announce, not the good message that was announced. I mean, that's, again, a confession. He didn't say, I came to convey the good message that was conveyed here. No. I came to set up the good message that I announce. Who gives a rat's patootie what message he's announcing? It's irrelevant. The only message that we ought to care that's being announced is that of God. What Yahusha says matters. What Yahweh says matters. What Paul announces is irrelevant. Under the best of circumstances, And don't think for a minute that Paul announced what Yahusha said. He never once quoted him. Wrote 13 despicable letters. There isn't an accurate quote from Yahusha in any one of the 13 letters. This was all about Paul's imaginary friend. And you know something? Paul's imaginary friend, like Muhammad's imaginary friend, was modeled after Paul. It was his alter ego. Just as in the case, Paul and Muhammad are in the same in this regard. They are their God. That is the truth. Now, if we were evaluating a creative writing assignment prepared by a developmentally disadvantaged child in the sixth grade, we'd be inclined to listen to this with a sympathetic ear. But that's hard to do when the scribe is an adult claiming divine inspiration. And keep in mind, the Nestle Allen, the source from which I cited, is the most universally respected textual resource. I'm not making this up, folks. This is what the man wrote. In due time, we will come to understand the reason that this unveiling came kata downward by Paul. Why Paul set forth and laid down, set up, if you will, his message as opposed to simply sharing it. And why he did so on his own, uniquely and separately from anyone else. But between the attitude on display here and the quality of the writing, something is seriously amiss. In actuality, Paul is simply lying, and he's having a very difficult time selling us on his lie. And he wants to embellish everything, but he's constantly confessing. It's just that Christian readers don't see the confession. They're blinded to it. But it's all over the place. It's very much like Paul. Muhammad. Muhammad confesses to his scam throughout his testimony. Paul was compelled to go to Jerusalem as a result of the conflict between his message and the Torah's instructions. This summit would include the most influential men on the planet at the time, Yahusha's disciples, in addition to the leadership of the called out in Jerusalem. This statement includes the Greek noun euangelion, which is a compound of you, well done, prosperous, healing, and beneficial, and agelos, messenger. It literally means healing and beneficial messenger. It's typically changed to gospel in your English Bibles. While plausible as an extension, it is a stretch to render it good news, as is the case in some Christian Bibles. But we will consider why these Bibles include I preach, which is from an entirely different verb. It's hard not to comment when you hear things like a guy hawking a 80% assault rifle and talking about how it's going to be just perfect because Christmas is around the corner. I mean, what puts Christ back in Christmas more than an assault rifle? Kirk, are you going to get your assault rifle all polished up for so you can go out and celebrate Christmas? Oh, we've got Kirk on the line. Maybe he thought my question was inappropriate. No, we'll hope we get Kirk in when he's live. Scott, if you could see if you can resolve the technical glitch, that would be great. Okay, Kirk.
Yes, sir.
Oh, Kirk, I'm sure you ran out right after the commercial to get your 80% AR-15 assault rifle to put Christ back in Christmas.
Well, nothing. Yeah. What is that you always say? Nothing spells goodness like bombs and bullets and bombs.
Bullets and bombs. Yeah, you know, nothing. I can't think of any better way to achieve peace than bullets and bombs. Yeah. The 91st Psalm, we've been covering it on and off here. The 91st Psalm, which talks about Yahweh's protection. Somehow, in the psalm, I don't recall hearing any reference to a ghost AR-15, to bullets, bombs, or any other weapon of war.
And arm yourself. Yeah, right. No,
yeah.
He's not there. He's not there. That's not Yah.
No.
He's quite capable of taking care of his family. And that's kind of close to what I wanted to ask you about. Karen and I had a conversation after Friday night's program.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that she felt that God had always watched over her and protected her, even though we came late to the game as far as knowing mm-hmm. Yah. And I've kind of felt that way myself. And so I got to thinking, so let me frame the question.
Yeah, by the way, so have I. Mm-hmm. I feel the same way. I don't know if it's true. I don't know if it's true.
Well,
and my feelings are mostly irrelevant in this regard.
Sure.
But I feel exactly the same way. We can compare notes, and then we can see whether or not it's realistic for us to feel that way.
Well, this is why I think it has some merit.
Okay.
I thought about it a while. I went back to Hebrew words are not stuck in time, right? So everything.
That's correct.
We also know that he saw everything when he planned it, because he's not stuck in time, so he can see the
correct.
Beginning and the end.
He
correct. Also made, he also tells us that he protects the family.
Correct.
Now, if I am the family now, and I was mm-hmm. a Christian before, he knew who I was, and he knew I was going to make the
correct.
Decision he wanted. Now, he may have thought
correct.
To himself, I'd rather have more Doge than Kirks, which I understand, but I'm there.
you and me both on that one, Matt. Yeah, Doge is David for the for a listener that don't know, but Doge was the smartest dude who ever lived, a spectacular writer, a brilliant thinker, and came to know and love Yah better than anyone else. So yeah, God has a preference for Doge over Kirks and Yadas, but nonetheless, we're still part of the family.
We ride too, yeah.
That's right.
We don't try the car, don't we?
That's right.
Now, keeping that in mind, if uh-huh. you as a father, I don't have any children, but mm-hmm. you have children, and mm-hmm. and if you knew ahead who your children were,
mm-hmm.
and you promised to take care of them, you're not stuck in time.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he protected the family. He went to extraordinary lengths to protect his family throughout all the recorded history of,
yep.
of the Yehudim.
Mm-hmm.
So why
yep.
could he not have protected you, knowing that you would be there?
Yeah, in fact, I will go one step further. I think God plays favorites. I can't speak for you in this, and that you may be more like Doge than I am or was.
Sure.
But I can tell you that had God not reached out to me before I knew who he was, I would never have come to know him. I would have been stuck in religion and politics all of my life. And I don't think I'm alone in this regard, because the same story is true with Abraham. The same story is true with Moshe. The same story is true with most of those that Yahweh reaches out to. The same is true with Yahuchanan and Shimon Kefesh among the disciples.
Yeah.
So I think that he does. I think that yes, he knows what our response is going to be ultimately, because he's not stuck in time. I don't see is. Let me put it in more human sense.
Yeah.
Terry is your wife.
Yeah.
Did you know Terry before you met her?
No.
No. Did you know that you were going to love Terry before you met her?
No.
No. Did you know you were going to marry Terry before you met her?
No.
No, no. Okay. So you walked up and you introduced yourself and you made some overtures where it was possible for you and she to get to know one another.
I drew a portrait.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then you drew a portrait? That's how, well, you were an artist. So, okay. So you saw this girl that you thought was cute over there. You drew her picture, and that was what you used as your opening line? That's a good one. You know, if I had done that, why, we would never have gotten to know one another. It would have been a stick figure. But you can draw.
And today we learned that Kirk is far more smooth than us.
Wow, that's as it relates to to lines used as pickup lines. Mm-hmm. That's got to be one of the all-time best.
Yeah, well, you do what you can.
You do what you can, man. That's smooth. Okay. I'm jealous, by the way. But the bottom line is that you drew her picture and you introduced yourself to her before you knew anything other than she was cute.
Uh-huh.
All right. So what would preclude Yahweh from introducing himself to us? And trying to get to know us before we knew him.
Well, there's no reason to assume he couldn't.
No. Did you deprive Terry of free will when you drew her picture?
No.
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 Did you deprive her of free will when you went up with your picture and said, you know, I'd like to get to know you?
Well, we were at a party, and I was drawing everybody's picture, but it was
okay.
Hers. She was save the best for last.
Okay. So, but the fact is that you didn't deprive her of free will.
No, absolutely not.
You didn't predestine your relationship with her by introducing yourself to her. I think Yahweh introduces himself to those individuals he would like to know.
Sure.
And it could be that, you know, it's a quirk of personality or a character, or there's some aspect of our personality that he's interested in spending time with. And so he introduces himself. Now, how we respond is up to us.
Yeah.
So if he can do that, why not go one step back and say, well, since he is not stuck in time and knows that he is going to find something in us interesting, and that he knows he's going to introduce himself to us, and that he knows that we're going to choose of our own volition to respond and ultimately engage in his family, wouldn't he be irresponsible not to protect us so that that can happen? In other words, since Satan is also unlimited in time, if Satan knew in advance everyone that was going to ultimately accept the terms and conditions of the covenant,
which he could,
wouldn't it be in Satan's interest, since there's so few of us, to take us out?
Absolutely.
So it's,
well,
that, it is
yeah,
a,
think of
yeah.
His own term, that I think is quite valid. Her point's quite valid. And sure, he watched over us.
And I feel, and I, you know, I have proof? No. But Yahweh's character is set in stone. His attitude, his approach, what Yahweh can and cannot do, will and will not do, is really set in stone. I mean, he has defined his character, his personality, his ambition. He has defined himself very clearly and is not wavering an inch from that. And if you look at the character of the Father that is defined in his Torah, I can't see how he could do anything other than protect his children even before they choose to be part of his family. Now, I'm going to give you some examples in my case.
Okay.
I was traveling throughout Africa, and I contracted malaria. And a tsetse fly bit me in a country that doesn't even exist anymore, in Rhodesia. And by the time that I got to Gondor, Ethiopia, where I was trying to investigate the credibility of the Falashas and their claim to be Jewish descendants who had the Ark of the Covenant, I became so sick that I turned into a little ball. I couldn't even move. The pain was excruciating. I was freezing to death while I was burning up with fever. And the malaria became debilitating, and there are no roads in and out of Gondor, Ethiopia. There's only DC-3s that land in a cow pasture if it's not raining, and it was raining. I was so sick that rather than treat me, they put an armed guard outside of my door so I didn't leave and infect anyone else. So finally,
malaria,
I did.
I know exactly. Yeah.
Oh, so you've had malaria. Okay. It is.
It was an Asia, but I was picked up to a hotel, so that was.
It is. Horrible.
Horrible.
And by the time that I finally worked my way through Ethiopia, I was in Haile Selassie's Ethiopia, ran into a mobster there who, actually I ran into the mobster's daughter and hit it off with her. And he ultimately got me into the presidential suite of the hospital, and they began to treat the malaria. probably kept me alive. Mm-hmm. And but then I went to, while I was in Ethiopia, and to the American Express office. I used to manage travel, and to reaffirm my my travel arrangements. And they would not do it. So then I had to went through Egypt and, you know, saw the buildings there, and I was recovering. I thought I was starting to look, you know, and act pretty decent, and got a great tour of Egypt, and I was going to go to Israel next, but you can't go from, at the time, you couldn't go from Egypt to Israel. You had to go to a neutral country. And I went back to the American Express office. They wouldn't. They would not confirm my tickets. They said, yeah, "We're sending you home. We don't want responsibility for you anymore. You look like you're a walking dead." So the plane that I had tickets for, it crashed. 77 people aboard. The first act of Islamic aviation terrorism. The plane was hijacked. Was blown up. Not a single soul survived.
Wow.
I should have been on that flight. I still have a ticket for that flight.
Wow.
I survived that flight. So, do I feel like I was protected? Yeah, I do. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're talking about Terry's suggestion to her suave husband, Kirk, that God can and does protect his children even before they come to know him. And I'm going to give you another example in my own life where I think that I was protected. I was flying a Pilatus, an airplane that I owned for a number of years, into Reagan National, which is Washington National Airport, just outside of the Capitol. In fact, you actually flew over the White House on final, and then on short final, you fly directly over the Pentagon. I was about 800 to 1,000 feet above the Pentagon when I was cleared to land, and there were three runways at Reagan National. At the same time, two Airbuses were cleared to land on the other two runways. They were both slow and dirty, which means that they were at approach speed, and they had their full flaps out, which is a maximum wing vortex, which is the circular wind that comes off the tip of a slow and dirty airplane. And if you get caught in the wake vortex of an airplane, it creates a tornado kind of an effect that takes over the airplane, and it just spins out of control. Well, I didn't get caught in one. I get caught in two. And it took my airplane upside down 800 feet above the Pentagon.
Wow.
Now, that is unsurvivable. There is no solution that you can practice on a trainer to recover from that. You know, I have all of my aerodynamic forces now that are acting the opposite of the way they should, and rather than lift, I have the antithesis of that pulling me to the ground, plus gravity. And I'm upside down in an airplane where I'm way too slow to recover. And yet, yeah. I recovered that airplane. Oh, well, the airplane recovered. And I flew on. And so, you know, you say, that scenario is irrecoverable, and yet I'm alive.
Wow.
So, yeah, I happen to agree with Terry. I think that it think it happens.
Well, I didn't disagree. You know, I just had to think about it a while and say, well, that would make sense. I mean, he certainly knew us before. He certainly knew us where we'll be at the end, and not the end, but in the future. And he knows He knows us now, so why not?
Yeah. So. Yeah, I was transitioning out of Christianity. I had given up on Christianity, but I really wasn't a member of the covenant, although it was this journey that was going to lead me to the covenant. When I was engaged with the 91st Psalm and encouraged to write Tea with Terrorists and then Prophet of Doom, and, you know, I was at gunpoint with Al-Qaeda, and I was irritating them by asking them questions they didn't want to answer. And I was in a dungeon, and they were, you know, fingering the triggers on automatic rifles pointed at my head. And yet I survived that, and I've never ducked once, never protected myself, no ghost AR-15 here. And I had thousands of very specific death threats having written those books, and yet never Never ducked once. So, yeah, I think I agree with her. I think that not only does he, I think it would be irresponsible and out of character for him not to.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking if Paul had actually read the Torah, would he not have seen himself in it? I mean, he told him, you know, and Habakkuk.
Oh, if he had read the prophets, but he did, you know, that Paul.
Well, he claims he did, but I mean, did he ever
Paul
really
quotes,
read the Talmud?
Yeah, well, but Paul quotes the second chapter of Habakkuk, which is specific to him, where it says he calls him by name, Shaul, the plague of death. He quotes it in two letters. His first letter to the Galatians and one other letter. He quotes the same passage twice. So he would have had to have read it.
Well,
I mean, he quotes the very passage that condemns them.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, here's what I think. Paul.
Mm-hmm.
I think Paul absolutely knew that he was that he is possessed by Satan, which is why he admitted to it in his second letter to the Corinthians. I think he absolutely knew that he met Satan on the road to Damascus, which is why he put Dionysus as quote in his mouth. But I think that he was so arrogant that he recognized that he could admit those things, including quoting from the very prophet where Yahweh condemned him as the plague of death, and that he was so much smarter than everybody else, so much better than everybody else, so much bigger than everybody else, that no one would ever hold him accountable.
Wow.
That's arrogance.